Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and a bare-bones day one of the Republican National Convention. On the banks of the mighty Mississippi, the grand old party had plans for a big bash to celebrate the McCain-Palin ticket. Today, at least, that's largely eclipsed by Hurricane Gustav, the big storm moving today into the Gulf Coast. Yesterday, in Pearl, Mississippi, John McCain said it's time to leave partisan politics aside.
I pledge that as tomorrow night, and if necessary, throughout our convention, we will act as Americans, not as Republicans.
In Minnesota, Republicans have scaled back their convention to a minimum today. President Bush isn't coming. Neither is Vice President Cheney. But the campaign goes on. This hour, On Point, live from St. Paul, the Republican convention in the eye of a storm. You can join the conversation. Could you ever have imagined a wilder start to a GOP convention? In the anniversary week of Katrina, does Gustav work for or against John McCain? And does Sarah Palin sink or swim? We are going to head to New Orleans in a moment. And later this hour, we'll check in with Alaska for a closer look at Governor, now VP pick, Sarah Palin. But first, I want to introduce my guest today at our broadcast booth in the XL Center in St. Paul, who will help us through the politics and meteorology this hour. With us is Nina Easton, Washington editor for Fortune magazine and political analyst for Fox News. Welcome, Nina. Great to have you.
It's great to be here.
Also with us, Matt Continetti, associate editor of the Weekly Standard. Good to see you, Matt.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Nina, can you imagine a wilder start to a convention?
It's wild, Tom. It's but, you know, I could tell there were some issues with the Republican convention from on the ground immediately, because I left Washington National Airport on Sunday at this exact same time as I left for Denver. When I left for Denver, there were lines out the door for every single airline. When I left Washington National Sunday morning for the Republican convention, it was like a ghost town. The TSA official said to me, "Glad you're here."
It's like, and yet, there'll be a lot of delegates here this week.
There's delegates here, but, you know, just the I don't know what Matt's experience is with downtown Minneapolis. It's quiet compared to Denver. There just isn't the level of folks coming who are not necessarily delegates, but just desperately want to come here. So even aside from Gustav, there's a different feel coming into this.
Matt, we'll talk about it, and this storm is changing as we speak. But on balance, is this storm a gain, a net plus, or net minus for the GOP convention week?
Oh, I don't think there's anything political about the weather, but, you know, Tom, if there
just wait till the party's
there. There is a plus, though. It's that Bush and Cheney aren't showing up. And I think a lot of Republicans were very nervous about what the reaction of the country would be to this televised speeches by the president and the vice president, who are so unpopular.
Let's hear just a little bit more from McCain and Governor Sarah Palin on the storm and politics. Here's yesterday, John McCain at a St. Paul press conference via satellite link from St. Louis. In anticipation of Hurricane Gustav, McCain announced big changes to today's convention lineup, saying now is not the time for politics.
This is a time when we have to do away with our party politics and we have to act as Americans. We have to join with 300 million other Americans on behalf of our fellow citizens. It's a time for action.
And here's McCain's VP pick, brand new as of Friday, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. She was touring with him over the weekend. Here she is at a rally in O'Fallon, Missouri. Sarah Palin saying people need to have confidence in their government.
For people in those coastal areas of Mississippi and Alabama, and especially for the citizens of New Orleans, this is another moment of terrible testing. They need our support in prayer and in rescue, relief, and in works of charity. And above all, they need to know that government at every level is ready for the worst. And Governors Jindal and Barber and Riley and Perry, those good folks, they're rising to meet this very trying situation.
Time for prayer and works of charity, says the new VP candidate. Louisiana Convention Delegate Rick Robery told reporters in Minneapolis on Saturday that he had hurricane-proofed his home in Baton Rouge before leaving.
I felt secure that my house was going to be all right. I just felt bad that I wasn't going to be able to be there for my neighbors.
He may be there for his neighbors today. The McCain campaign chartered a plane, or more than a plane, to send delegates from states in the path of the storm back home to be there for their own homes and for their neighbors. There really is no news here today untouched by the big storm sweeping down on the Gulf Coast. David Hammer is a reporter with the Times-Picayune newspaper. He spent the night inside New Orleans City Hall, where they've been coordinating emergency management for Hurricane Gustav. He joins us now from New Orleans. David Hammer, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Tom. In more ways than one, we just lost power in the newspaper building. So,
wow, we're glad that we got through to you. How does it look? As bad as feared? Not as bad as feared? What's going on?
Well, so far not as bad as feared, but the winds have definitely picked up a bunch in the last couple hours. Gusts now in the 60 and 70 mile per hour range. So definitely picking up here, but it's not as bad as feared by any means.
Does it look like a punch for New Orleans? Is it going to end up west of New Orleans? Is it going to skirt along the coast and not devastate anybody? Can we tell yet?
Well, the worst of the storm is going to be west of New Orleans and is not going to hit New Orleans. But, like I said, we're getting pretty close to hurricane-force winds in the city of New Orleans right now. So, and that wasn't supposed to happen until later in the morning. So New Orleans is going to get some effects here, and there have been some problems in terms of rising waters in canals and trying to determine when to shut off, put up flood walls, close floodgates, I mean, and certainly debris and problems with the high winds.
David, you're there in New Orleans, billions and billions set aside to rebuild levees and flood walls, but of course they are not complete as we sit here, in the third anniversary week after Katrina. Is there fear that even if it doesn't hit New Orleans head on, you could have significant flooding in the city?
Well, there's definitely concern about that, and that's why there were very strong communication systems put in place and strong coordination among federal, state, and local agencies for really the whole week leading up to this, and it's been a marked change from what we saw leading up to Katrina, for sure. So the city is much more prepared. It did a very impressive evacuation. Some reports that are really unconfirmed because they can't be, but from police saying that there are only 10,000 people left in the city because of the mandatory evacuation and a 18,000-person assisted evacuation from rail, bus, and airlines that were provided from federal contracts has pretty much assured that only the people who really want to be here and want to put their lives at risk are still here.
We've seen the pictures. Talk about a ghost town. New Orleans looks like exactly that in the last day or so.
Right. I heard the reference to that in your earlier conversation, and I kind of chuckled.
You want to see a ghost town, go there.
Yeah. I mean, starting at 3 or so yesterday afternoon, it was basically looked like a military stronghold because only police and military vehicles were out. There were a few straggling citizens' vehicles and people walking about because there was no rain yet, but it was eerily calm. And then, of course, I've been driving out on the streets after the tropical storm force winds have hit, and that is really the picture of a ghost town.
David, huge political stakes around this storm because of how the nation judged the federal government's response to have been so completely inadequate in Hurricane Katrina time. It looks like the federal government's throwing a lot at this one. Do you have the sense that they're going to come out with a better grade on their response to Hurricane Gustav than they did to Katrina?
Well, I think that is yet to be fully determined, but I think that we can clearly state at this point that with no opinions involved, just state as fact that the effort has been far more comprehensive leading into it. And, you know, what actually happens on the ground is going to be a new test in terms of the immediate relief and recovery.
And, of course, there are the days and weeks that will follow, and that's when a lot can be revealed. David Hammer with the Times-Picayune speaking with us there from New Orleans. David, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Nina Easton with me here in St. Paul. Here we are. Big storm. Republicans cutting back to the bare bones.
maybe not as bad a storm as some had feared. Maybe the whole thing gets back up on the rails by, I don't know, tomorrow or Wednesday. Maybe not. Nobody knows at this point. But when you look out, you know, between Palin on Friday and Gustav over the weekend, here's John McCain standing in the middle of those. Does he look well positioned now? Has this pushed Barack Obama in his big stadium speech off the screen? Is this good for the GOP?
I think they're trying to make the best of a bad situation, and John McCain is obviously trying to look both assertive and compassionate at the same time. And obviously, Katrina's right up front in their brains, and they want to respond correctly this time. And I think they are. They really don't have a choice. But I don't think, you know, this helps them in any way, of course. It's just very bad luck. And, you know, Obama came out of that convention with a bounce, and, you know, it's tough.
A pretty small bounce. CNN shows him only up 1 point. I mean, that's closer than they've been in a while.
Well, I saw a Gallup poll that showed him up 6 points.
So okay,
I,
so maybe more
depends
bounce.
On what whatever poll you want to look
depends
at.
Depends what poll you're looking at. But here's the GOP. You've got to wonder if they don't really get to have a convention this week. If that happens, is that a big deal? Or is it just a bummer for the media who set up and now there's no game to call?
I think it's a big deal just in that it conventions typically, of course, you do get some kind of bounce out of it. You rally the troops. John McCain needed to rally the Republican base. A lot of people weren't terribly excited about him as a nominee. He's tried to do that, of course, with the Sarah Palin pick. Mm-hmm. But I do think it hurts if you're not going to have a convention, sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with you today from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the site of the Republican National Convention. A whole lot of that program, the convention program, off today and maybe off for more than today. President Bush and Vice President Cheney, Arnold Schwarzenegger, were scheduled to speak tonight. Now that's off. Essential business will go ahead, but the rest is yielding to Hurricane Gustav. We're going to look in this hour from Gustav to Alaska Governor VP pick Sarah Palin to John McCain in the eye of the storm. I've been joined by Matt Continetti from the Weekly Standard, by Nina Easton, Washington editor for Fortune magazine, and with us right now at the XL Center on a bluff above the Mississippi, the calm, cool, and collected end of the Mississippi today, not the roaring one down on the Gulf, is Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst at Time magazine. He writes the campaign blog, The Page. Mark Halperin, thanks very much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
Put this campaign, this race, into perspective for us right now. Here we are, Mark, at the start of a kind of a off-on-a-funny-foot Republican convention. Maybe it's good for them, maybe it's not. We don't know. You saw the Democrats last week. Now here's McCain with his new VP in tow, Sarah Palin. Give us a snapshot of this race right now. How do you see it?
I think the debates are going to be critical. I've said for a while I thought this race was about whether Barack Obama was seen as an acceptable alternative to the American people. If he is, I think he'll win. He might win big. He'd more likely would win narrowly, I think. I think most of the states that voted for John Kerry will vote for Obama. Most that voted for Bush will vote for McCain. The reason I think the most significant thing I have happened, and I'm happy to be proved wrong in the coming days, is I think John McCain has given up his best argument. I think his winning argument was not ready, too inexperienced regarding Barack Obama. I think his selection of Sarah Palin takes that argument away. I know there are many Republicans who agree with that. And so I would say, well, before I thought it was Obama's to lose, I believe now it would be very difficult for John McCain to win this election.
Matt Continetti, how about it? John McCain has given up his best argument, the not-ready charge that his ads threw at Barack Obama, at least they did. How do you see it? Sarah Palin.
I think that's a legitimate point of view. I think it may well prove true on Election Day. As one Republican consultant put it, you know, McCain's strong hammer has turned on that experience question has turned into a rubber mallet with his selection of Palin. However, there is an alternative view, and that is, one, McCain was lagging behind on enthusiasm with his Republican grassroots supporters, and there's no question that his selection of Sarah Palin has energized those supporters. You have Rush Limbaugh, for example, swooning on the radio like I don't really listen to him anyway, but I've never heard him swoon like this before. And you see even in the polls reflected now the Republican enthusiasm spiking for McCain. The question is, you know, the fact is the Republican grassroots are smaller to some extent than they were in 2004, say, when you could actually win a very close election very closely by turning out that Republican vote. So it seems like there's a shift in strategy now on the part of the campaign McCain campaign, not only in terms of message, he can't really use that experience message anymore. He's going to try to go for a reform message, it seems to me. He's going to try to take change from Barack Obama, which is going to be a little bit difficult. And in terms of campaign strategy, he's going to run to that base again, it looks like, while also trying to appeal, as we see him doing in New Orleans yesterday, by saying it's time for everyone to put their American hat on.
Yeah, American hat, front and center, hard hat as the storm comes ashore. Nina Easton, if Governor Palin is revving up the base for the GOP, why? Why? Is it all about her strong evangelical orientation and that piece of the Republican base? Is there something more than that?
I think there was great fear among the base. Let's just start, like, step back a couple weeks. There was great fear among conservatives, social conservatives, that he was going to pick a pro-choice candidate like Lieberman. So you start from that. It was a pleasant surprise. She's very conservative. She's appealing. She's a reformer. All of that. But I have
when
to
you say appealing, you mean she's appealing, young, energetic, physically attractive.
Yeah, and I think they think. I'm still trying to understand why they're so excited about her. But so I'll step back because I think it's a risky choice. And if I could talk about that for a second on three levels. One is they're clearly trying to go after the women vote because John McCain is behind on the female vote from even where George Bush was in 2000 and 2004. And a big chunk of those voters are Hillary voters. Now, they're assuming that Hillary voters are going to vote, you know, for Sarah Palin might come over because she's female.
They wanted a woman so badly that even if she's
conservative and so on.
Strongly conservative, pro-life.
And the assumption is, well, Hillary voters are, you know, more socially conservative than Obama supporters. But in fact, you know, Hillary supporters supported Hillary because she could answer that 3 a.m. call. They saw her as a reliable commander-in-chief.
So you don't buy the Hillary forces roll over.
Exactly. Secondly, your regular, I know social conservatives are very excited, including Matt's boss, by the way, Bill Kristol.
Yes. Talk about swooning.
My colleague on Fox, yes, swooning. But I know they're excited about her. However, the sort of party regulars, I've heard from a lot of them who, as Mark kind of alluded to, are very troubled by this pick, feel like he had this opportunity to pick somebody who was ready for commander-in-chief, a 72-year-old candidate, should have picked somebody who was ready to be commander-in-chief.
Tomorrow, today.
Didn't. And now my question is, am I just hearing from, like, Washington establishment types, and that's not a broad, deep feeling?
Right.
I don't know. And one more thing that I think we need to look at is that she hasn't been vetted to the extent that a lot of other candidates were vetted. You have reporters crawling all over her personal life right now in Alaska. That's, you know, who knows what could come out, and who knows how she'll perform in the debates against Joe Biden.
We're going to go to Alaska and get a view from there in just a moment. Let's listen first to what John McCain had to say about Sarah Palin at his rally last Friday in Dayton, Ohio. He described her reputation for reform and her middle-class roots.
The person I'm about to introduce to you was a union member and is married to a union member and understands the problems, the hopes, and the values of working people, knows what it's like to worry about mortgage payments and health care and the cost of gasoline and groceries, a standout high school point guard, a concerned citizen who became a member of the PTA, then a city council member, and then a mayor, and now a governor.
A mayor, a governor, and a standout high school point guard. Keep that in mind when it comes to quick response on the commander-in-chief front. On Saturday, then, at a rally in Washington County, Western Pennsylvania, Senator McCain spoke about why he wants to be president and why he chose Sarah Palin as his running mate.
I'm running for president to make government stand on your side, not in your way. I spent the last few months looking for a running mate who can help me shake up Washington and stop the corruption and clean it up.
At that same rally on Saturday, Governor Palin said she was ready to shake things up.
It's always safer in politics to just avoid risk and to go along with the status quo. But I didn't get into government to do the safe and easy things.
Alaska Governor Sarah Palin there Saturday with John McCain on the way, they thought, to the convention in St. Paul. Now Gustav has come in between all that or gotten in the middle of it. They may be here soon enough. Let's go to Alaska right now for a perspective there from Fairbanks, Alaska. We're joined by Dermot Cole. He's a columnist at the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. Dermot, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
So give us an Alaska view of your Governor Sarah Palin. What's the response there first been broadly to news of her selection as John McCain's VP running mate?
Well, Governor Palin is quite popular in Alaska, and that's mainly because we're living in a time, at least in Alaska, of unprecedented wealth. And really, during her 2 years as governor, she hasn't had the sort of budget problems that many other states have had. In fact, most Alaskans are going to get a $1,200 check this month from the state government as an energy rebate. Now, in that environment, she has done exceptionally well and has very many strong supporters in the state. In terms of the reaction to her being chosen as John McCain's running mate, I'd say there's a widespread view that, wow, this is great. There's an Alaskan who's on the national scene, and really for the first time since former Governor Walter Hickel was appointed Interior Secretary by Richard Nixon nearly 40 years ago. So there's strong support for that. There are a lot of questions about whether or not, however, she is ready to become vice president or the president, given her sort of slim experience.
She's been in office as governor for what, a year and a half or so now. She's got a strong reputation as a reformer in that time, ready to go against her own Republican Party. Does that look like it makes her, sort of a political cousin, temperamental cousin of John McCain?
Well, it may or may not. One of the things that Senator McCain has made much of, and in fact, over the weekend, he said perhaps the main reason that he chose Governor Palin was her opposition to the so-called Bridge to Nowhere down in southeast Alaska. Well, the fact of the matter is that when Governor Palin was running for governor in 2006, she was an enthusiastic supporter of that project. She was very far removed from what McCain was saying, and she supported the project, particularly in Ketchikan, where it was going to be built. And it was a year ago when she canceled it. The statement that came from the governor's office said the main reason was it seemed unlikely that Congress was going to come up with the rest of the money, so they decided to cancel it.
Strongly opposed to abortion, even in the case of rape or incest. Reportedly, I guess, supported Pat Buchanan for president in 2000. Supports the teaching of creationism or intelligent design in public schools. Has she pushed on that in Alaska, or is that a position she just holds? Has she actually moved on it?
No, she has not moved on that. And all those issues came up during the 2006 campaign. But really, they were not the central issues in the debate. The main reason she was elected is that she followed former Governor Frank Murkowski, who had become incredibly unpopular by the end of his term, and she was seen by many as a fresh face and a reformer. And she, to be frank about this, she took on the establishment of the Republican Party here. And has battled with them quite consistently. I guess one of the things to look for, at least from Alaskans' point of view, is Senator McCain has been at odds with Senator Ted Stevens for a long time, and Alaska Senator Ted Stevens is now facing indictment in Washington D.C. But Palin and Stevens have had a relationship that runs hot and cold, and it'll be interesting to see just how critical she becomes of him.
Dermot Cole, in Fairbanks, last question. Let me ask you, how would you feel personally about Sarah Palin as president of the United States, if that would come to pass in a McCain administration? Sarah Palin as commander-in-chief.
Well, I wrote a column the other day saying that I thought this was a reckless decision by Senator McCain. And I think, that she's done pretty well as governor. I just don't think she's ready to be president or the vice president of the United States.
Dermot Cole, columnist of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner in Fairbanks, Alaska. Dermot, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Mark Halperin, how about it? Can you charge up the base on the one hand with a pick like Sarah Palin? At the same time, John McCain's reputation is going after the Republican establishment himself. She's done that in Alaska. Will this duo, could they freak out the Republican establishment? Could they imagine that they're going to have a president and vice president who, I don't know, want to turn on the GOP and clean house in some way that the mainstream Republican, at least power structure in Washington, would resist or be up, you know, turned over by?
I'm open to the politics of this being smart for McCain. I don't think they are. I'm open to it. But I'm not much interested in the politics of it. I think when you pick a running mate, you have one obligation. You have an obligation to pick someone who's manifestly ready to be president. That's what Bill Clinton did. It's what George Walker Bush did. It's what Al Gore did. They all won the popular vote at times because they did the right thing. And I think as impressive as Sarah Palin is, as much as she has credentials that make her a fine young leader in America, it's impossible to argue that she's qualified, I believe. And it's certainly equally impossible to argue that John McCain knows she's qualified. He spent less time with her, as others have said, than one spends hiring an assistant manager at a Target store. And I think the responsibility that he had to pick someone qualified, then he can worry about the politics. He failed that. And I think it makes him a significantly less serious candidate for this office. And I think that's what the American people will see it, whether or not all the scrutiny that Nina said that Sarah Palin is getting now causes her to blow up in some way.
What went into this decision? Your magazine, Time, has interviewed John McCain at length recently, big cover story this week, and is very upfront in describing him as, I forget the exact words, but kind of, you know,
cranky.
Not just cranky, but kind of checked out,
yeah.
Totally having put himself in the hands of handlers who have him on a very sort of narrowly scripted path. Do you know, do you think John McCain truly chose her himself, or has he been handed this is what you need to get, you know, your base fired up, here she is?
I'm working on a real answer. I'll give you four quick theories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that his pollsters made him believe that he could not win without a choice that reset the entire perspective, that opened themselves up to the possibilities of winning more voters who were anti-Bush, more voters who want change, more voters more women voters. I think that clearly must have gone into it. I think he wanted to shoot a spitball at the establishment. People long predicted he would pick someone who looked politically risky because that's the kind of guy he is. I think he wanted someone who he could control and wouldn't be someone who people would look at and say, well, maybe that person should be president instead of John McCain. These are theories I have. But again, it's so fundamentally irresponsible, and it is so at odds with the one winning message, so winning that, in fact, they gained traction on it for a month that Barack Obama isn't ready. I can't explain it to you. And as I said, I think it makes him and should make him a substantially less acceptable alternative to people as president of the United States.
Matt Continetti, you're a conservative and a Republican. You're a columnist, so you've got opinions. We've heard you say this may work politically, but how do you feel about it? On its merits, as a choice for vice president, heartbeat away from the presidency, do you think this is a good pick, a reasonable pick, a responsible pick?
I think it's a reasonable pick. What I'm sensing is a great divergence between elite opinion and popular opinion on the question of Sarah Palin. And if you look at history, divergences between elite opinion and popular opinion, grassroots opinion, tend to fall end up in the popular opinions column. And so in some sense, what McCain has done, who is historically have had this reputation as a politician who is favored by elite opinion, who sometimes adopts positions, takes on issues that elite opinion wants to be seen taken on, has now completely reversed himself and gone toward what you might call the popular opinion choice. Granted, the public doesn't really know this woman, but I'm speaking popular opinion of the conservative grassroots.
We got 20 seconds before the break, Mark.
These are dangerous times. I'm all for listening to popular opinion and not just going with elite opinion. But nothing in her resume suggests she's ready to be commander-in-chief. If that's elitist, then I'll say I'm an elitist, but I can't understand that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with you today from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the site of the Republican National Convention, where the convention is largely giving way today to Hurricane Gustav in the Gulf. We've been joined from Time Magazine by Mark Halpern, editor-at-large and senior political analyst there. He writes the campaign blog, The Page, by Nina Easton, Washington editor for Fortune Magazine and political analyst for Fox News, and by Matt Continetti, associate editor at the Weekly Standard, author of The K Street Gang. Let's take a call from East Lansing, Michigan, and Sandra. Hi, Sandra. You're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. I guess my my comment is, I know that John McCain made a point of saying this was not about Republicans and this was not about Democrats with reference to the hurricane.
Yes.
This is about our whole country. But then, only John McCain was invited there by the governor. And this really turns into a photo op for McCain and Palin. And it just also points out to, you know, well, what's going on with, you know, they said George Bush is not, you know, really having a hand in the, and this whole
But Sandra, let me ask you, what would you have them do? Do you think the Republicans could go ahead, you know, and be kind of cheering and dropping confetti and swinging from the chandeliers in St. Paul when they've got a hurricane down?
No, I think that both, in order to make this about all of us, I think both McCain and Obama should have been invited down to New Orleans. And I think what I'm saying is it turns into a photo op for the Republican candidates, and that's all it is by their going down there.
Sandra, we've got it. Nina Easton, Sandra's tough on this from East Lansing, Michigan, says photo op. On the other hand, what was John McCain supposed to do, especially with Katrina looming over?
And, of course, the person doing the inviting is Governor Bobby Jindal, who was at one point on the sort of longish middle list of VP candidates for McCain, and is apprising himself quite well down there now. His reputation is certainly going to grow from this, assuming all goes capably. At least it's a chance for him to really get catapulted further onto the national scene.
But Matt, do you think that John McCain can look effective during this week? I mean, after all, he's not commander in chief at the moment. He's not, you know, telling the Homeland Security and FEMA what to do. Maybe he'll give his speech on Thursday night from a barge on the Mississippi, for all I know. But it seems as though he's welcomed this almost as a chance to almost, you know, run away from the stage set and get out there on the hustings.
Right. Welcome may be a too strong a word,
mean
Tom.
The destruction,
but reading my daily paper this morning, the New York Times, I have to say I was struck by the coverage. It was actually reasonably favorable to McCain, saying that he seemed assertive on that podium, that he really was a true contrast with Bush's response to Katrina 3 years ago. And let's not forget, that was really the moment where Bush lost his gut connection with the public. I mean, he had established that connection after 9/11. He had fought that tough re-election fight. And sure, his approval ratings were slipping throughout that summer of 2005, but what severed that connection without a question was the response to Hurricane Katrina. And now Sam McCain is trying to show that he is not that guy.
Mark Halperin, with that Katrina history there, did John McCain really have any choice? I mean, he could hardly stand at a remove.
It's clear they didn't think they had any choice. I'm not so sure that they did. They clearly didn't think they did, and I think they're hoping that after today they can get back on schedule if the damage is minimal. This has been such an unorthodox year, and I think one of the strengths of the McCain campaign is they are nimble. I think there would have been some past nominees who would have been reluctant to cancel the President of the United States, cancel the Vice President, although there may be political benefits to that as well. But it is a strength of the McCain campaign that they were politically smart enough to recognize it was the right thing to do and nimble enough and confident enough to say, look, it may cause us some short-term or even long-term pain, but it's the right thing to do and what we need to do.
Unorthodox last week with the great big outdoor stadium appearance of Obama and, of course, that unusual face-off between Obama and Clinton at that convention. Do you think the Republicans want to get back on track here, get back into the kind of normal pace of things, or does Maverick McCain, might he prefer to sort of stay on the road and literally give his acceptance speech, for all I know, from a levee in Louisiana?
Well, the rule book is out the window because we have the conventions back-to-back, and we have the running mate selections virtually back-to-back. Mm-hmm. And so the notion of the traditional way you get a bounce out of the convention is not applicable in this cycle. So it's possible that they can find another way. Right now, what they need to do is they need to shore up the red states. They need to make sure that their electoral college, they're in a position to win in the electoral college, and that may not require a big convention speech. The rule of thumb of conventions that I believe is the first night's worth 5%, the second is 5%, the third is 5%, and the last is 85%. So as long as they can find a way for him to give a big, attention-getting, powerful speech that goes well beyond what he's normally been able to convey to the American people in that kind of communication, wherever it's from, I think that'll be fine.
Nina, tough challenge. Barack Obama had a crowd watching on television bigger, I read somewhere, than the Beijing Olympics opening ceremony. 35, 40 million people. Maybe the storm helps bring some of that around to John McCain, but that's a lot to compete with.
It was a lot to compete with, although it does, I think Barack Obama also risks the two things with Obama on that last night. One, I think he risks a sort of, as somebody said, he thinks he's the second coming. I mean, we saw him, the Greek temple and the fireworks shooting out of there. I think that does strengthen that feeling that a lot of people have that he thinks he's, you know, his face should be on a coin. Secondly, I was one of the few people who wasn't wild about his speech. I thought it was very much appealing to the left. It was a very kind of typical liberal left speech, except for the second half. It got a little more moderate, more of an attempt to appeal to swing voters. But I thought he didn't take the opportunity to appeal to those sort of Hillary swing voters that he should have done. So I thought the speech was not as strong as it could have been.
Let's go to Ann calling from Boston. Hi, Ann. You're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. The points I wanted to make was simply about Governor Palin and her views on science, which kind of I was on the fence between McCain and Obama. I really was queasy about Obama because of his lack of experience. But for McCain to choose a person so close to the presidency who believes in the creationist story and who rejects the idea that human beings have anything to do with global warming, a great irony, I might add, given the part that global warming plays in hurricanes like Gustav, I think is appalling. I mean, to have, and I think it's going to do, I think it has activated me for Obama. And I called my father, who's a civil engineer in his early 80s, who's been a Republican his whole life. I said, Dad, can you really vote for McCain still? And he says, well, you got me. You know, this is a really wacky choice to have a president conceivably who believes in the creationist myth. And believe me, I'm a believer myself, but I believe in evolution, and who also rejects the idea that human beings have a role in global warming.
And what about the fact of Sarah Palin being a woman on the ticket? Geraldine Ferraro's been there years ago for the Democrats, but McCain could win here. It would put a woman right there in the president-vice president duo. Does that matter to you as a female voter?
I would like to see a woman, but this would be too costly, and it would be a president who can't use the internet and a vice president who doesn't believe in science. I think this is a pretty antiquated pair, an anachronistic pair, and they don't belong in the White House.
Matt Continetti, Ann, thanks very much. Matt Continetti, how about it? Maybe 4 years ago, this country's religious right was riding high, very strong, and, you know, maybe that would have, her strong and very public faith might have, you know, unquestionably worked for her in the GOP. Now, you hear Ann, who was on the fence, and she thinks this is tilting her toward Obama. Does Sarah Palin's faith work as a firecracker, as a stick of dynamite in this campaign this time, or something else?
I don't think McCain chose Sarah Palin in order to win Massachusetts. I think he, which he's not going to win, I think he chose her in order to win Ohio, Michigan, the states he needs to win in order to become president. And for that, it's her background. She's a union member. The husband's a union member. She hunts. She snowmobiles.
She guts her own moose.
Have you seen the picture with the moose?
Yeah,
I think she's a family woman. I think that those are the reasons that he put her on the ticket for those two states.
Let's get a view outside Massachusetts in Carlboro, North Carolina. Cynthia, you're on the air to St. Paul, Minnesota. Cynthia.
Hi, I'm an independent voter, and in 2000, I actually campaigned for John McCain because I really like him as a person. And so I also tend to vote Democratic, but I like John McCain quite a lot. And so I was anxiously waiting to see who his pick would be. And then when I saw who it was, initially I thought, oh, that really fits with him. I want to see what she's about. And unfortunately, when I heard that she's pro-drilling in Alaska, and when they were talking about ice melting and polar bears not having habitat, she said she didn't believe it, that the science proved it. And unfortunately, I cannot vote for them. It couples with the fact that John McCain has a 0% approval rating from the League of Conservation Voters, which I was actually willing to overlook depending on who he was with, but I've now decided not to vote for him. So I would have to say, as a swing voter, he's made the wrong choice, but he may not have been going for my vote anyway. Thank you.
Right. Cynthia, thanks very much. Nina Easton, there's a swing voter, another voter on the fence, swinging away on the basis of this one on environmental grounds. Sarah Palin sued the Bush administration for listing polar bears as an endangered species. So, but she and John McCain are on opposite sides of drilling in ANWR. So
I just think, again, this goes back to the danger of this choice. I mean, you ended the Democratic primary with Hillary Clinton having gotten 18 million votes. Of that, about a third were going to vote for John McCain. Has he lost those John McCain voters by putting Sarah Palin on? Those are Hillary voters think a lot like your last two callers. Mm-hmm. They're going to disagree with her. They're going to be troubled by her lack of experience, and her socially conservative views are really going to not ride well with them. And again, this goes back to John McCain's age. We have to face that straight up. 72 years old.
72 as of last Friday.
76
Saturday.
When he leaves office. This is something it's going to again highlight the fact his age and the prospect that we could have President Palin.
Mark Halperin, did you see a Hillary voter swing to McCain as a real possibility at the end of last week, as something that could end up making the difference in this campaign? Do you agree with Nina that Sarah Palin's choice may have, if there was some chance of some Hillary chunk coming to the McCain column, that's diminished by this choice?
I think if Sarah Palin performs really, really well, that he could net women voters. He'll lose some for sure, but he could net some women voters overall if Sarah Palin performs very well. But I don't think it will help him win the election because, again, it's not about Sarah Palin. It's about the fundamental obligation that John McCain had to pick someone who was as ready as anyone else to be president. You can argue that there were people more ready than Joe Biden, but I don't think you've not heard a single person on the Republican Party that I've heard say Joe Biden's not qualified to be president. And for conservatives like Bill Kristol to say stars born and this is great, I think they're just trying to get in line and trying to be hopeful and optimistic that McCain has a chance to win. I find it impossible to believe that Bill Kristol thinks that she's qualified to be president as early as January.
What about the populist thread in American history, in presidential history? Matt Continetti says, hey, this is elites versus the great public. There's a kind of populist enthusiasm here, a popular enthusiasm for Sarah Palin, and that's not to be,
you can be
sneezed at.
You can be a populist, and you can have populist views and a populist favorite and still know something about national security. And when they cite the fact that she's been commander-in-chief of the Alaska National Guard and that Alaska's near Russia, I think that proves the emptiness of the case they're trying to make.
And when, I've heard that turned right around over the weekend, people saying, well, she's got just about as much experience as Barack Obama. She's been governor for a couple of years. He's been in the Senate for not very long.
The difference is he faced voters. He was nominated by voters who had a choice to weigh in up or down.
Again and again in the primary season.
Correct.
And in Illinois, of course.
Correct. And they made that choice. He may not be qualified. I'm not arguing that his experience is what it necessarily should be. But he faced voters. He was not plucked by one person's capricious choice to be put on a ticket.
Let's go to Ron in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. The experience question notwithstanding, McCain has played to the extreme wing of his party with the choice of Governor Palin, while Obama, during his convention, played to a more moderate group, and the battle is for the independents. And I think Obama wins on that regard. And then one other quick point I'll make is that the Democrats have to not be afraid and have to paint this very starkly for the voters to say John McCain had a choice, and what did he do? And Obama had a choice, and what did he do in terms of the vice presidency?
Ron, thanks for your call. Our time is short. Matt Continetti, how about it? Ron's analysis is John McCain played to the extreme of his party. Barack Obama played to the independent, to the mainstream. Do you agree?
I'm not sure how much Obama played to the independents in his speech, but no, I think clearly independents are a crucial constituency here. The Republicans lost him by, I believe, 18 points in 2006, maybe 15 points. They need to regroup some of that if they can win. This pick is a pick that plays to the conservative base of the Republican Party. However, I would say that for most voters, historically speaking, and it may be different this time if Palin really bombs, the vice presidential nominees have not factored heavily in voters' choices in the end. They really do come down to the contest between the two men who are competing for the presidency.
Quite a week it's going to be here, but of what shape we have no idea as we sit here on the first day of this convention. Nina, do you expect, we're going to see McCain and Palin arm in arm, wherever they are. Sheesh, I mean...
Making the best of a bad situation.
Well, probably. I mean, that's you know? A view from our Fox News commentator, but maybe not. Maybe you rev up exactly the wing of the party that was not enthusiastic about John McCain, that remembers agents of intolerance, his comment about the religious right. Maybe they swing in hard here and come to the rescue as they did for George W. Bush in 2004.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is John McCain has to get his base, but he's also got to win independent voters. He has to do better with independent voters than George Bush did in 2004. Who did he lose with this choice is the big question.
Mark Halpern, net Mark, are you confident that people are going to come down with your view on the sort of commander-in-chief qualification here, or maybe look at that charismatic, magnetic governor from Alaska and say, come on, let's roll the dice.
They may not come down with that view of Sarah Palin and what it means for McCain, but I think it takes McCain's only winning argument away. And so I don't think he can win unless he convinces people Obama's not ready, and I don't think they can make that argument the way they were going to make it before.
Not ready goes away. Mark Halpern with Time Magazine, Matt Continetti with The Weekly Standard, and Nina Easton with Fortune Magazine. Thanks to all of you for being here. What a wild week we've begun. There's much more to come, though. We have no idea exactly what it's going to look like. We'll follow it all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.